Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. On this day after the 2021 Primetime Emmy Awards, we'll introduce you to Pop Star Television, the service whose unique original fare has quietly racked up a bunch of Emmy goods. Try this on. 5 awards and 10 nominations to be exact. Pop Star TV President Jim Romanovich joins me next. Half hour number 2 turns to Retro Television, one of the 24-hour mansions of classic TV. Now Retro is dipping into first-run series with Idol Chat, out to reunite cast members from Happy Days to Knot's Landing. We'll hear from Retro President Joel Wertman and Idol Executive Producer Roger Neal. Also ahead, Netflix's Primetime Emmy domination, very local activity at Hearst television stations, and our new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Block Talk Radio, Spreaker and Tuner Radio, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal Reason, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. Wherever you are, happy Monday afternoon to you, and welcome to the first of 3 episodes this week of the program all about TV's current and future. 75 degrees at the top of the hour. Some wonderful guests coming away over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So ring yourselves in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or Tuner Radio. And we've got our chat room for business. Chuck 1970 is already in the room. Welcome aboard. So if you have a comment, don't want to use the phone, use the room. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And incidentally, in our final half hour, we want to hear from you about the Primetime Emmy nominations. What shows did you like that won? What shows did you not like that did or didn't? As well as your thoughts about how the presentation went and where it went right and where it went wrong. So use the phone, use the room throughout the program, and either way, we'll hear you and get to you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker to the screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Jim Romanovich from Popstar TV, live with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. For the first time ever, Mega Content Services reaching viewers through smart TV sets and devices won the big scripted prizes at the Primetime Emmy Awards. Netflix topped the overall count among programming outlets with 10 awards, 7 for The Crown, named Best Drama Series, and 2 for The Queen's Gambit, the Best Miniseries winner. Apple TV Plus pulled in 4 awards. They were all for Ted Lasso, which won Best Comedy Series. When Creative Arts honors from last weekend are included, Netflix mega-trumped all programming services with 44 Emmys, tying a record for one season set by CBS decades ago. HBO came in second with 14 awards, Disney Plus third at 13 awards. Separately, The Crown and The Queen's Gambit tied for top individual program with 11 Emmys each. Saturday Night Live and The Mandalorian for Disney Plus tied for second place with 8 honors apiece. I'll have a firm analysis on those results and a few recommendations for 2022's Emmys next hour. Another accomplishment of last night's Emmy cast on CBS, a bigger viewership than last year and in recent years. Some 7.4 million people tuned in, according to early Nielsen calculations. That's up 16% from 6.4 million last September, an all-time low for that event. That's the best viewer engagement since 2018, when 10.2 million people watched NBC's Emmy Showcase. And all 26 Hearst owned broadcast stations launched a new project earlier today, Very Local. It's a free advertiser-supported channel available through smart TV sets and devices. Each channel offers delayed presentations of a station's daily newscast, plus a mix of local, regional, and national content. That should say original, local, and national content. Some adapted from Hearst's assortment of magazines, including Esquire and Runner's World. That's news notes for now. We'll have quickies at the top of the next hour. And right now, joining us live from Los Angeles, the president of Popstar Television, Jim Romanovich. Jim, welcome in.
Thanks, Simon. Appreciate it. By the way, it's Romanovich. Just wanted to get that
straight. Romanovich.
But I appreciate
okay.
being on the show.
I corrected you. I just have to take my word for it. Use your imagination. Jim, I think you may be known as the network that has won more Emmys than a lot of people don't know about. So brief everybody on how long Popstar has been around and what does it do?
Well, Popstar, you know, started off as a magazine brand, which was 25 years old. And it was known for catering to the preteen crowd. You know, what color are Justin Bieber's eyes? you know, win a date with so-and-so. That was the type of magazine it was, and it was very successful. By the mid-2010s, you know, right around 2013, 2014, the magazine was having some tough times, as were all magazines, especially teen magazines. So we saw an opportunity, and that's what we do as a production company. Associated Television International is the company that we belong to here, that I oversee worldwide entertainment. Two things that we took out of the dustbin were the Hollywood Christmas Parade and the Daytime Emmys back in 2009. And we saw the same opportunity with Popstar Magazine, that it just needed to be taken out of the dustbin, given a fresh coat of paint, and beef up the content and make it more relevant today for today's audiences. And we did that. And then we said, you know what, let's now make this a big brand. So we brought in Popstar Radio, which we have, and we have Popstar Country Radio. And that continued to grow, and the magazine continued to grow. But then we decided, you know what, we need to go a step further. Let's create Popstar TV. This was at the cusp of really the digital explosion of channels and networks about 3 years ago. 2017, I'd say about 2017, 2018, where everybody was getting a channel up of some kind. It was kind of easy to do, but the channels that were coming up were like, you know, somebody's flower channel or somebody's bar mitzvah channel or whatever it was. So it wasn't anything specific to a brand, let's say, even though there was Netflix and a few others. But, you know, you didn't see Paramount Plus then. You didn't see Peacock. You didn't see people like that. It was basically Hulu and Netflix and, I think, Prime. Those were the three biggies. And then it was us coming into it as well as an independent. And as we were going forward with the programming there and finding our way through lots of soft launches is kind of what we were doing over the first couple of years, we realized, like a lot of people do, that their programming skews a little older when you gear it as a television channel, when you model it after a television channel, which is what Popstar TV has always done. We modeled after the CW, after AMC, that kind of a look. And when you do that, you know, you skew up. And our programming also skews that way. So we're finding we're getting more 40-year-olds, 40-year-old women, 50-year-old women watching it, as well as 30-year-olds too. But what we weren't getting were the 16-year-olds and the 20-year-olds, because they don't watch television. They don't. I have my kids are in their 20s now. They don't watch television. They do TikTok on their phones. They do games. They do that kind of stuff. So we decided with the recent year that we were going to do kind of this rebranding, and that's what you're seeing here, which led to a lot of the nomination wins and really making the right partnerships of programming as well.
When you're a network that is trying to establish itself with a format, no matter how eclectic it might be or how, you know, micro-genre or micro-target audience it might be, how do you get people to produce for your network? Especially, again, if you are sort of a newbie player among not only the Netflixes, Hulus, you know, the broadcast cable networks, the mega content plus type services that have popped up over the last 2 years, but also all these other smart TV set and device distributed networks.
Well, we're not quite there with having people produce for us. In other words, we're not commissioning projects out there from anybody. We've always controlled our own productions. All the new productions that you see are productions that we produce. We have a huge soundstage in Burbank, three huge soundstages, as a matter of fact, state-of-the-art, brand new, 5 minutes north of Disney. And a lot of our programs are done there. We shot the Daytime Emmy Awards just this past year in our studio. So if that tells you something, that's where we are. Now, with that being said, we make, as I said before, it's making great partnerships with people that have really viable programming, and one of those is The Bay, which won a ton of primetime or a ton of Emmy Awards, not just this year, but in previous years as well, too. And I've known Gregory J. Martin, the producer of the show, for many years, ever since he began that show, as a matter of fact, in 2010. And I've been with him ever since. You know, he's been the creative force behind it, and really the chief storyteller along with Wendy Rich, and has a great cast of actors that, again, he was on the cusp of something great, and he made it even greater through the years. Well, we decided to partner with him in this current season. So we, as Popstar TV, look for those alignments that will help us get us to the next level, as well as bring other people to the next level as well, too. You know, we have another program called B-Sides, which is all about the up-and-coming music scene based out of San Francisco. You know, it, Popstar TV is just a perfect fit for this type of show. So we do that. We've acquired movies. So we'll go out and acquire movies. We acquired Tainted Dreams, which is another soap opera, digital soap opera that did well. And I'm looking for more of those. But for now, we're not really engaging anybody to produce for us unless it's something that we own or something that we have created. And then we'll go out and get the team to actually produce it.
And we'll talk more about The Bay and about some of the other original shows, the new unscripted and scripted shows, in a bit. We're talking with Jim. How do you say your last name?
It's Romanovich.
Romanovich. He's the president of Popstar Television, which is a fast-growing smart TV service available on many smart TV sets and devices. And he joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, beginning our 90-minute edition to kick off the first of three episodes we're doing here from Nueva York. Simon Abbott with you live from the Big Apple, 75 degrees at the top of the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Chuck1970 has a question for our next guest from Retro TV, and we'll ask that question, by the way, Chuck, just let you know, in our next half hour. In our second episode of the week, coming your way on Wednesday, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, my lead guest will be Vin Rubino. Until recently, he was the executive producer of the $100,000 Pyramid, which was done here in New York on ABC. And now he's the executive producer of the second season of Supermarket Sweep, the ABC revival with Leslie Jones hosting, which premieres next Sunday night. Vin Rubino is our lead guest. That's on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. And coming up on Friday, we've got the trio of showrunners behind La Brea, which is premiering later this week on NBC. David Applebaum, I think no relation to yours truly, Stephen Lillian, and Brian Winbrand. They'll be our lead guests, followed by the head of original content for CuriosityStream, the very popular nonfiction service started by former Discovery Channel head John Hendricks. Rob Burke, the head of original content, will be with us. They've got some very exciting projects in the works, including an original documentary special about an actor who decided to do something even more important than acting for his country and his world. That's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. The Bay, which has a lot of soap opera talent behind the scene, or daytime drama behind the scenes, how did that get started? And give those who haven't seen the show, give us a sense of the plot line.
Well, again, this is Gregory J. Martin's creation. My only contribution really to this is to bring Gregory into the Popstar TV Associated Television fold. And when he first started producing the show back in 2010, he was doing it as 7-minute webisodes. And I quickly told him the one piece of advice I gave him that he took, and I'm glad he did, was I said, focus on making this look like a television show. And that's what he did. I said, you need to do broadcast hours or broadcast half hours, because you're going to find many uses for this after the fact. Nobody's going to be able to do anything with 7-minute webisodes. You know, look at Quibi. Didn't work. So for that kind of content, it does not work. So that's what he did. And when he started doing that, you saw, and then, of course, he brought in some great talent behind him to help write, and he got some really great production elements to it, great storytelling, and it was just amazing. And he started winning Emmys for it. And when we had the opportunity with Popstar TV to do the same, we brought him in as well, too, and proceeded to win more Emmys. The Bay is basically about, reminds me of Knott's Landing a little bit. It's this family, this very rich family, not in a cul-de-sac, but it's in this Bay City, called Bay City, that, you know, has, you know, family secrets. You know, there's all the soap opera family secrets you can imagine. There's cheating, there's murder, you know, all sorts of things like that. Twins, you know, doppelgangers, all the villains that you would see in a soap opera, except it is to the 10th level. And he does it so well, and he shoots it like a primetime drama. So it's really, really, really great. So that's why we took it on. But as far as what we do, I can't really speak more on the Bay, because that is Gregory's, you know, that's his baby, and you should have him on to talk about it, because he would be a great guest for you if you haven't talked to him yet. We produce Purgatory, which is just launched its second season right now on Popstar TV, and that one is really a fantastic show. Shot like a drama. We couldn't enter it in the daytime Emmys last year because they felt it didn't qualify. They felt it qualified as a primetime Emmy show. So that's good and bad, I suppose. But it just shows you the quality of the show that we were doing, which I would match against anything you would see on FX, AMC, or the CW, because that's the bar. That's the bar that Popstar TV sets. Because we're not in competition with anybody else. We're in competition with ourselves, and you have to be. You have to look at what you're doing and how to get to the next level, because it's all about survival and growth and providing that program content that people really want to see in an easy way to see it. It's something that touches them at that particular moment, whether emotionally, financially, escapism, whatever it is that they need to find, we have to make sure that we're touching those bases. And Popstar TV, so far, you know, we're growing. That's all I can say. We're growing overseas. We keep adding platforms left and right. Lots of smart TVs overseas. We just signed a deal with Samsung UK, with Philips, with Vizio. All of these are coming, and we have a lot more. You know, a couple platforms a month, easy. And these are global. I'm not saying that there aren't any other independent channels doing this. I don't know. I only know what I see with me. I see what's being featured in, like with Mark Berman, of course, who, you know, wrote a very nice piece about us. We're doing something that is making a big buzz. And where it goes, we don't know. We just keep going, and we play it smart, and we understand that, you know, we have to target the demographic that's really watching television. That's really what it's all about. That doesn't mean that the same demographic doesn't watch it on their iPad or their phone, but for the most part, people that are watching Netflix, they're watching it on their 70-inch screen TV. That's how they watch it, because that's the experience. You want to see it big and large and sound booming throughout the room, and that will never change. So you don't want to program anything lesser than what they expect. We can't look lesser in our original content than what people see all the time on Prime or Hulu or Netflix or Paramount or Peacock or you name it. We have to be in that group as far as quality, technically quality, and creative as well too, as far as brand new original content. That's our goal. Although we're still in competition with ourselves, because we have to better ourselves each time.
And Jim, I want to also say thank you to Mark Berman. I saw that story that he did in Proming Insight. He's one of our favorite guests, by the way, covering the world of TV.
Yeah.
And it was his story that prompted us to seek you out to come on today's program. What about Unscripted? You have quite a few shows on your schedule in that vein. Tell us about some of them.
Well, you know, a lot of the Unscripted stuff that we have on there right now that we had produced, everything from Real Vice Cops to Street Magic, shows like that. These are programs that are either currently in production that we run all over the world, or these are programs that had previously run from deals that we have done with other broadcasters, such as Discovery Channel or Sci-Fi. And again, we produce for all of these people, A&E, and so forth. So when we produce these shows, we own the shows, and we bring them back. And some of them, you know, haven't been seen in a while, like Mysteries, Magic, and Miracles, which we just brought back, which was, believe it or not, the very first major original series for Sci-Fi Channel back in 1994. You know, they were running Sightings and a few other shows back then, but they were all acquisitions. Mysteries, Magic, and Miracles was really their first developed show, and it was their number one series for 4 years. Well, we went back and remastered those shows and gave them, you know, a little bit of a polish. Again, some of it might be dated, which makes it fun to watch sometimes when you're seeing, you know, mysteries or predictions of things, especially with Y2K at the time, to see if something actually came true or not. And with Patrick McNee as a host, who's, you know, from the Avengers, John Steed. And to put it in now into a high-definition format is a lot of fun, and we get new audiences for that. But with that being said, you know, we've got so many great movie shows that have come off the CW that we produce for them that now come to Popstar TV. So that's a lot of what you see here. We have created a few others. One was called Manhunters, which is kind of a Reno 911 spoof on Bounty Hunters, which was a lot of fun. And we may do a few more of those like that, too. We're still looking, and we're still seeing what kind of partnerships will work for us there. But that's kind of where our unscripted is there. We're very good. Travel is a big one as well, too. We travel all over the world. I can't say anything more about it. We pretty much cover the gamut from crime to travel to cooking to whatever it is. And it's because these shows have appeared on major broadcast networks or major cable networks.
We are speaking with the head of Popstar TV, Jim Romanovich. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. Popstar TV now available on more and more smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Very interesting to see with Amazon coming up with their made class of TV sets. And if you haven't heard, Comcast, parent company of NBC Universal, is coming out with their own line of sets known as X-Class. Expect in the next 2 months, we'll see if Popstar can get on and how quickly they can get on. Jim joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Smart Retail Live. I'm with you live from New York, the other side of the U.S. of A. And we have a few more minutes with Jim. So how about getting involved? Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. BYU TV, the Brigham Young University-owned television network, is at it again with a brand new original scripted series called 9 Years to Neptune. Coming up next week on Tomorrow Be Televised, you'll meet the duo behind it, Tyler and Peter McKellar. They're the creators and the showrunners of 9 Years to Neptune, coming soon to BYU TV on cable and satellite. They're coming your way next week, another 3-episode week, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. As Popstar is growing, how are you doing with advertisers? Are they discovering your network? And if so, how do they like it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can tell by the programmatic advertising because that's how the linear channels work. You don't go out and seek it. You know, everything that you see as far as 30-second ads on digital television is all programmatic from either coming through the app or it's coming through the other service you happen to be on, whether it's Roku or Plex or Stir or what have you. When you see that they're actually running ads and not seeing your logo flash for 3 minutes, that's a good sign. And I can tell you that we see all the major ads that you would expect to see, you know, the Progressives, the Grubhubs, and, you know, all of the, you know, tried and true sponsors that you'd expect to see, McDonald's and so forth. So we're doing well on that. You know, that kind of advertising is not really a moneymaker yet. The VOD is a little bit more important, and we're going to be getting into more transactional VOD as well as we continue to grow, where we can package certain things together for a very reasonable price and put in a few extra perks that people wouldn't be able to see on the linear portion of Popstar TV or even the regular VOD. Again, you have to make it worth somebody's while to invest even a couple of cents into it. And that's really what we're talking about here. I do want to mention, before we end this, though, you had talked about unscripted. When I think unscripted, I'm thinking reality shows and not necessarily nonfiction. We recently won a Daytime Emmy Award for Saluting Everyday Heroes, which was an outstanding, we won Outstanding Directing Team for a Single Camera Nonfiction program. And again, it was not about the COVID pandemic, because I think people are tired of all the bad news coming around that. It was about the first responders and everybody, your next door neighbor, whoever it was, that was just an everyday hero to make a difference in somebody's life, to save a life, to Protect a Life, whatever that may be. And we are known for doing these sort of pivotal, serious, thought-provoking documentaries. We did a couple before with Dean Cain and Montel Williams, two guys, friends, two diametrically opposed political views. Yet they came together to produce two great documentaries for us prior to that, which was Hate Among Us, which also won an Emmy Award, which talked about anti-Semitic crimes that are still being committed to this day. And the one before that was Architects of Denial, which was about not the past Armenian genocide, but what is still going on, the violence on the border of Armenia with bordering territories. And is that still going on? A lot of people feel that war is still continuing and people are still being persecuted for it. So we went there with Dean and Montel to cover all of these things. And again, very well received on each of them. Both started off as theatrical films, went to Popstar TV. And so those are the kind of things that we do as well. My Mark and I get along. I don't know how much time I have left, so you feel free to cut me off. But Mark Berman and I go back probably 25 years, 30 years almost, and we share a love for classic television, and that's kind of where we came together. And I've always produced documentaries based on classic television, or I should say associated television, as which some are now seen on Popstar TV. I took the Brady Bunch to Hawaii for a 30th anniversary. We did the 50th anniversary of I Love Lucy. We featured the Addams Family, the Munsters. We did all of these retrospectives. I did the 35th anniversary of Rocky with Sylvester Stallone for A&E, 25th of Ferris Bueller. We did Sci-Fi Channel's 20th anniversary. So we do a lot of these sort of, what you would call them, just sort of retrospectives. I wasn't going to say retrospective, even though that's what they are, but it's kind of like a you just want to give a big kiss out to all of these people to really thank them for such great programming and for making an impact on our lives at various times. And that's why we do those kind of shows, because people remember. And that's one of the reasons why we got back into why we took on the Hollywood Christmas Parade, which was deader than dead in 2008. It was nowhere. It wasn't even called the Hollywood Christmas Parade. So we took it on in 2009. We found, Hallmark Channel. Eventually CW ran it. We gave it a polish, a different look, paced it up a little bit, made it more relevant, and we had to make it larger than life, larger than what people remembered it to be. That was our goal, no matter how big it was in the past. And the same thing with the Daytime Emmy Awards. They were dead by 2008. There was no network in 2009 willing to take it. We put together the deal to bring it back, and we stayed with it 2009, 2010, and 11. After that, they went back into digital and cable and stayed there until we came back on board in 2020. And brought it back to CBS.
This past summer was on CBS for the first time in a few decades.
First time since 2011, because last time we produced it was in 2011. We came back in 2020. And again, we were going to do the big show, and then, of course, the pandemic hit. So we had to really improvise with that. And same thing for this year. Next year, we are back with it again, and hopefully we'll be live with a big audience in Pasadena, so we'll see.
And on that note, we want to let you know that if you want to see Popstar TV for yourself, it's on many smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place, more to come. And if you want to know more about the service online, here's where you go, www.video.popstaronline.com. That's www.video.popstaronline.com. Popstar TV, available on many smart TV sets and smart devices, with more of them and more original programming to come. Jim Romanovich, the president of Popstar TV, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on your past successes, current successes, and hopefully we'll be hearing much more from you and your service not too far down the road.
Well, thank you so much, Simon, for having me. I appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome. And again, thanks to Mark Berman, the Plumbing Insider, one of our favorite guests, for letting us know about you, and I'm delighted we were able to get you going. Take care. Have a wonderful week.
You do the same. Thank you.
Jim Romanovich from Popstar TV joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up on our next half hour, the head of Retro TV, Joe Whitman, joins us. And we hope to be also joined by Roger Neal, who is the executive producer of the new TV series that service just launched called Idle Chat. Yes, it's about classic TV retrospectives and reuniting cast members and so those classic TV shows like Happy Days and Knots Landing and Leave It to Beaver. Plus our classic trivia question of the week. We'll give you the answer to the current one and give you a new one also. And two prizes in play now. All that coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Best Internet Radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. One of BTR's most popular shows happens tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. I'm talking about the Kia D Unplugged show. That's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Kia D and gang giving you wonderful time, great entertainment, music, and a whole lot more. The Kia D Unplugged show tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, BTR, best of it 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to half hour number two of the promo about TV's current and future. Tomorrow will be televised. Sam, I'm with you live from New York. Stay tuned. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, plus our classic trivia question of the week. And if you like what you hear, give us a call. We want to hear from you, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Chuck1970 is still in our room. And he's giving us a question for our next guest, and we'll get to that momentarily. Over the last two decades or so, we've seen a lot of multicast channels pop up. These are channels that take place either on a digital subcarrier of a local television station or in some cases also or on a local cable system. And there have been a number of them devoted to classic television, This TV, Me TV, Antenna TV, and so on. Well, some of them are now doing original programming that's related to their classic status. One of those services is the Retro TV Network, otherwise known as Retro TV. It's also available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And earlier this month, they launched a brand new show that's all about reuniting cast members from such classic TV shows as Happy Days, Leave It to Beaver, and more, and movies and other things too as well. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the president of Retro TV, Joel Whitman. Joel, thanks for coming aboard.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. And we also have to be joined by the executive producer of Idle Chat. That's the show we're talking about, and that's Roger Neal. But first of all, for those people who don't know about Retro TV, tell us how long it's been going on and about some of the classic TV that you carry every day.
Oh, sorry. Talking to me, right?
Yeah.
Can you just ask the question again?
Oh, yes. Tell us about Retro TV, how it got going, and some of the classic TV shows that your service has every day.
Retro TV actually was the original broadcaster in the DigiNet field. It's been out there for a long time, and we broadcast classic shows just like everybody else. We have some different kinds of shows that some classic TVs don't broadcast, and we broadcast Naked City, all those, you know, I Love Lucy, all the various classic television shows. The only except we actually consciously made a change to, rather than compete totally for all the same programming, which is really available anywhere, we decided to invest in original programming as well that is reflective and has retrospective looks at shows that happen. And I think there's always been there's a great appetite for this kind of stuff from the audience that does watch classic television that took place in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, whatever you classify as classic now. But they kind of want to know where people are. And I think, again, interestingly enough, what we found is there is now an appetite for a much younger audience because it's all new to them. And so that's kind of where we're at. I mean, we're not the same a la carte as everybody else at this point, but we're in the same, you know, we're in the same space, so to speak.
Yeah. Before we get to IO Chat, I'm really fascinated by some of the selections that you have on Retro TV. One of them, and it was a show I liked very, very much, was Ray Bradbury Theater. It starred on HBO. It's the anthology series based on the stories of that great author, most of which he wrote the original scripts for. It then went to USA for several seasons. I'm curious why you decided to bring that aboard your channel.
I really like the show, to be honest with you, and I thought, again, we try to program not quite the same as everybody else. I mean, there's a plethora of these, again, classic shows, however you want to define that, that are available, and they're basically, again, available everywhere. You know, it's competitive to get them, and it's, you know, really, what is the viewer you're after? And I think right now, even like television in general, it's very niche oriented. And I don't believe that viewers just come and stay, you know, they don't. They just don't come and stay for multiple hours. They come looking for what they are interested in. And I, same deal, you know, Ray Bradbury's Theater is a great show. And that's why we decided to do it. And there's quite an audience for it.
I'm a big Naked City fan. I want to ask you about how you've done with that program. And we have a question from Chuck, 1970, our chat room, about something else you're doing, which is very unique among the all these retro classic TV networks. But first, talk about Idle Chat. It seems to be a show really does fit the mold of this service, where you're dealing with classic TV, but you're also giving it a spin by sort of using the whole idea of reuniting cast members from various shows. And it's not just by television, although that takes up the body of most of the episodes, but it also does Broadway shows, E.T., one of the classic Steven Spielberg movies of all time, mm-hmm. and so on. Now, what caught your interest in the show?
I think the same theme that I've been talking about, and that's that people who are interested, and again, it's an audience that has been subject to it and has experienced it, and there's a whole new audience. And I think people have a real fascination. I mean, it's almost a voyeurism thing about you're kind of stuck in time watching what was, but you kind of always want to know where it's landed, where those people are. I mean, you get vested to those actors and actresses because they're part of your fabric, part of your makeup, part of your emotional makeup. It's almost like, in a loose way, family. And people want to know where they get to. And it's just, you know, it's a natural interest. And that's what attracted me to the show. I thought, you know, this is a really good idea. And again, I look at this stuff very personally based. I mean, I want to know what happened to some of those actors and actresses. Like, I watch them as some of these shows in my childhood, and it's like I'm curious. And if I'm curious, there's certainly a percentage of the population that's just as curious as I am.
We're speaking with Joel Worthen. He is the president of Retro TV, which is available both as a multicast channel and also on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And he joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And his brand-new series, Idle Chat, which started earlier this month, is on Sunday nights, two times. You can watch it on Retro TV at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And his company also has another network. We'll talk about that in a little bit, called FAM, the Family Channel. And you can watch Idle Chat a half hour earlier at 7:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And by the way, at the end of the program, we'll let you know how you can get more information about both networks. So keep your eye out on that. By the way, we are still waiting for Roger Neal, the executive producer of Idle Chat, to join us. So Roger, if you hear us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. We use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up on our second episode of the week, that's on Wednesday at this very hour, my lead guest will be the executive producer of Supermarket Sweep, the second season, coming this Sunday night at 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station. Yes, Leslie Jones is back as the host. Vin Rubino, who also does the $100,000 pyramid here in this very Big Apple, he'll be joining us as our lead guest. It's Vin Rubino from Supermarket Sweep and the $100,000 pyramid, executive producer on both shows. He's live with us Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Something else you're doing with Retro TV is you are running episodes of one of the great classic daytime dramas of all time, The Doctors. It ran for several decades, from the early 60s to the early 1980s on NBC. And that's a real rarity because a lot of soap opera episodes have been wiped out, particularly NBC soap operas, because NBC had a policy at the time, so did CBS and other networks too, of wiping out episodes. How were you able to get the replays of the Doctors? And then we have a question coming your way on that. So just tell us how you were able to get that acquisition.
Okay, that's kind of an interesting question. So, again, similar answer as last, as I've been saying. That show also fascinated me, and I thought it was, you know, it's very interesting. And, again, storylines were always great in it, and not that I watched it as a kid or anything, but I'm certainly familiar with it. And, we made the inquiry. We found that there were episodes that were available, and we started with that, and then we, you know, it took a lot of investigating to find this stuff, but, you know, for whatever reason, a lot of this stuff had been stored in a warehouse by Colgate, and eventually I just made a blanket deal with them, and we got them all, and we, you know, have redigitized a lot of, like, we, you know, this all came on tape, which was actually, you know, and it's fragile, so we did this arrangement where we digitized everything, and the tapes are not factored anymore because we don't have to worry about them, and we've kind of recovered everything. So it's been a really interesting run, and again, it had it. Main interest is that it had an audience. I mean, it was very, you know, it's obviously an iconic series from the 60s, 70s, and it already had an existing audience that wanted to revisit it because they didn't have, where to see it. But interestingly enough, it has now, you know, which is what I expected. I mean, stories and good television survives no matter what. And that particular series is now garnering a younger audience. And it's interesting to watch. And the more we market it, the more we find that it's going to go that way. So it's gotten new life.
Mm-hmm. Chuck 1970 in our chat room wants to know how things are going with digitizing the 1980s episodes of The Doctors and when those episodes will be seen on your channel.
That was a real challenge for us. I mean, we have finally gotten the ability to work on those, but truthfully, just like anybody else, COVID really put a real damper in that for us, and it slowed down the process tremendously, and it made it very difficult for us to get those tapes, which we finally have gotten in-house. But it's been a challenge, but we're on it now. I mean, we finally gotten what we need. But again, it put us, unfortunately, the pandemic probably put us back more than a year on achieving what we wanted to. But I think we're gonna make it happen quite quickly now, or as fast as we can.
I want to thank Chuck 1970 for asking that question. And by the way, I want to point out that Colgate Palmolive, which makes more than just Colgate toothpaste, was the original sponsors of The Doctors and did it for most of its run, similar to what Procter & Gamble did with many of the other great daytime dramas of TV's existence. So I just want to point that out. And congratulate Colgate Palmolive for keeping the taped episodes available rather than letting NBC wipe off, which they did with a lot of the – that's why you don't see a lot, for example, on YouTube of a lot of NBC game shows of the 1960s and 70s because they, as well as ABC and CBS to some degree, after they would use – they only had a finite amount of videotape that they could use to take their shows.
They just reused
to take their live shows from on tape, and unfortunately decided to wipe them clean, and that's why you no longer see them. Unless you're a Goodson Tommen game show, which Goodson Tommen kept – kinescopes of their programs. That's why you're able to get Game Show Network and things like that.
Yeah.
When it comes to originals like Idle Chat, where do you want to go? What kind of direction do you want to go in terms of original shows for retro?
Well, we're doing other original shows also, and we launched recently an original show called Dracula's Kung Fu Theater, which is kind of a spoof, but it's got Dracula and he's the host. I mean, it's hilarious. Like really funny, and it came out of the gate. I mean, it's doing extremely well. It's got quite the audience, and it got it really quickly. And again, it's the same kind of idea. You know, they're classic kung fu films, but the twist is the Dracula element and in his castle and what he does and his jokes and all that stuff. And that's made it really great. You know, I mean, it's gotten a tremendous viewing audience from that aspect. And it's a lot of stuff like that that we're looking at, you know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're basically reimagining classic, because classic doesn't necessarily mean it's got to be a show that was made in 1960 and rebroadcast.
Yeah. Speaking of the 1960s, the early 1960s was a great time for TV shows that were done in New York, like Naked City,
mm-hmm.
like The Defenders,
mm-hmm.
like East Side, West Side. And Naked City, which also was getting some play on YouTube, was also
mm-hmm.
the forerunner of what was called at the time the semi-anthology show, where
mm-hmm.
the stars were not really the stars. It was the plots and the guest stars of an individual show.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't
mm-hmm.
know Naked City, you ought to. It's one of the very best, I think, TV dramas ever made by a man named Herbert B. Leonard, who also did another classic called Route 66, which was the first TV drama series that was made around the country. And really now you see an incredible this incredible set of subcultures that were presented in the four seasons it was on CBS from 1960 to 64. I'm curious, what has been the reaction to Naked City, especially given the fact that so many stars like Dustin Hoffman, Robert Redford, Robert Duvall, Diane Carroll won Emmy nomination for a guest shot,
yeah, no,
George C. Scott.
It's,
a lot of great talent either came out of Naked City or did Naked City.
Mm-hmm.
When that show was on.
Yeah, it has been great for us, and Route 66 has been great for us, and I think it all boils down to the same thing. And you really coined the phrase, you know, great television is based on great stories, great narratives. You know, it doesn't, you know, actors and actresses are important because they tell that story. But if that story isn't there and there's not something that an audience can actually vest in week to week, it's not going to survive. And I think one of the greatest things, which is kind of unfortunate now because it's been very watered down, but why classic television, 60s, 70s, 50s, why it continues to survive, the storylines, the narratives, they're just excellent. They never go bad. They just don't go away because they're always germane in the public's mind. Whether it took place in another era, it's still very relatable, a lot of this stuff, and that's why they survive. And again, if you want to, you know, move forward into the 90s, the 2000s, it's the same thing. The shows that do survive are the shows that they just have a great narrative and they have great stories and they have, you know, they have great characters. They're well told and the audience just vests. I mean, they vest because they're very relatable. Same thing, you know, and that's why those, you know, you asked me about those shows. That's why those shows are so good.
And they hold up, Joel, incredibly well, both Route 66 and Naked City. And I think it's a tribute to not only Herbert B. Leonard, but also a tribute to Sterling Philippont, who was the major writer on Route 66, and Howard Rodman, one of the great writers on Naked City, and people like Ernest Kimoy and Larry Marcus and Shimon Witzelberg,
mm-hmm.
and great directors like David Lowell Rich, great episodic directors, Stuart Rosenberg, who did those shows consistently, and they were just able to get not just top-notch performances, but top-notch writing and a willingness to, let's say, let's start this show this way. Let's break the boundaries a little bit about how we narrate, how we develop a storyline with the audience. Let's trust the audience in terms of,
of
how the plot goes.
Yeah.
And you really see that a lot. For example, who would have thought, let's do a Route 66 with the great stars of horror movies, Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney Jr., you know, meeting in Chicago for a special convention.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be a classic.
No, I agree with you. Those guys knew how to express themselves and they didn't, you know, they did not hold boundaries on themselves. And I think they had a way of really identifying and relating to their audience. And that's what made it work. And that's why it continues to work, because it's always been relatable and it's always going to continue to be relatable.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we are still awaiting Roger Neal, the executive producer of Idle Chat, which is the original series which reunites – cast members from classic TV shows and movies and other things too. Roger, if you're listening to us, you can give us a call, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you on and we'll extend the segment beyond where we're going to go so that we can get you in. So please do so if you can. And for those of you too, in our remaining moments with Joel, Joel Wertman, the head of Retro TV and the Family Channel, we'll talk about that in a moment. Give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple049. Stay tuned. Classic trivia question coming your way before the top of the hour. So get ready. You could win two prizes in play, including an I Love Lucy mix and match magnet set. And an interesting holiday special from Starz from 1999. We've got the cassette tape of it, and you can win it if you have the answer to our next classic trivia question. So stay tuned for that near the top of the hour. Joel, talk about Family Channel. It's not the Family Channel we came to know for a long time, but it's developed an interesting format. So tell us about that, where it's at.
I think it's the same kind of thing. Like, we're tweaking it. And I guess if you want to give the broad definition, we're looking to appeal to families, and we want to make it a safe environment where you can have co-viewing all day. And we're also trying to, the biggest attempt for us is to get original, our other programming that really evokes conversations in families, you know, that gives just a wide, and it doesn't, you know, not opinionated, not trying to sell a message or anything, but just trying to evoke those conversations. And I think in today's environment, we think that's incredibly important. You know, just the conversation's important, you know, where it goes and how it goes, that's up to the individuals, but just striking that conversation and striking it in families and having things that are thought-provoking and not just really pat, you know, just getting those conversations going. So that's kind of the main goal here.
Yeah. We've got about another minute or 90 seconds left. Well, where do you see your services going in the next couple of years? Do you want to do more than do original programming? Are there any other networks you've got in the pipeline? Where do you see your enterprise going?
Well, we will definitely keep doing more original programming. I think that's really the lifeblood of television right now. And I think if we don't get on that and stay on that, we'll become irrelevant, and that's not where we want to be. And as far as delivery process, we'll continue to deliver as a broadcast service, but we're very invested in the streaming end of things now. And again, I don't believe it's the only place it's going to be, but it is important, and it's important that we, again, are part of that service and part of that environment, because, you know, it's a very, again, and I'll use the word, it's quite niche at this point. I mean, people do not get their entertainment in one spot anymore. They get it in various ways, and they get it the way they want to get it. And I think it behooves any kind of service or any kind of broadcaster that they make themselves available anywhere that is for the viewing audience. And that's kind of where we're going. And as far as down the line, we just want to become a stronger, more we want to be current, and we want to be strong, and we want to do something that really has an effect. You know, that when you come to watch our networks, you're not just coming to kill time. You know, we want to have something to say. You know, we want to affect any kind of change. I mean, like I said, the environment right now is a lot different than it's been for a long, long time. And we want to be part of effective change, and that's what we kind of strive for. And whether that, and you know, it doesn't always have to come through philosophical means, political means, or anything else. And entertainment's an extremely powerful tool. It's always been powerful, and you can, again, if you evoke that conversation, however it is, and however, you know, if you create storylines that get people thinking, that's really all we're about right now, just thinking and having a conversation. And we've done an important part.
And we will leave the conversation there, except to let you know that both Retro TV and the Family Channel are multicast services. In many cities around the country, they're available either as a digital subcarrier service from your local television station, one of the stations in your area, and or it's also a local cable channel. And in other parts of the country, it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And on both services, Retro TV and the Family Channel, you can catch the brand-new series Idol Chat, hosted by actress, singer, former Baywatch co-star Susan Anton. On Retro TV, it's on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. On the Family Channel, also on Sundays, but a half hour early, 7:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. If you want more details about Retro TV alone, go to www.watchretrotv.com. That's www.watchretrotv.com. And for information about both services, go to getafteritmedia.com. That's getafteritmedia.com. Both will take you to the same location for more about both of these fine multicast and smart TV services. Joel Wertman, the president of Retro TV and the Family Channel, thank you very much for being with us. Good luck on the success of continued success with Idol Channel, Idol Chat, and other original shows. And Hans, we will get you back on the trail soon. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate the ability to speak to the audience. So thanks again.
You're very, very welcome, Joel. All the best. Take care.
Thanks, you too. All right.
Joel Wertman, the head of Retro TV and the Family Channel, joining us live from Los Angeles. I'm very sorry that for whatever the reason, Roger Neal could not be on the program today, the executive producer of Idol Chat. Tell you what we'll do. We'll try to book him on either for Wednesday's show or Friday's show. So after we get complete, at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the PR people that we talked to, and we'll find out what happened, where the breakdown came, and we'll invite our guest, Roger Neal, the executive producer of Idol Chat, that we didn't get on today, to come on our show either this coming day or Friday, or if not, later before the end of the week, down the road. Our classic trivia question segment coming your way, but first some words to the fine folks at Audible.com. If you love the work of Leon Moriarty, you ought to know there's a brand new audiobook out. It's another great work. It's called Apples Never Fall. It's a combination of genres. It's a romance. It's a mystery tale. It's a tale involving mature adults and a whole lot more. So Apples Never Fall, Leon Moriarty's new tale, is available to you right now to try out for 1 month through Audible.com. You know, Audible.com, if you haven't heard, is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you listen on any device. Whenever you're hearing us right now on Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, our various podcast sites, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of service, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, important health and wellness information for you. And if you're an Amazon Prime member already, make that two audiobooks you get for the trial of one. One of them can be from the fast-growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcast series, best of off-Broadway and regional theater, and great one woman and one man performances. So how about making today the day you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? It's a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. For all details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Now time for our classic trivia segment, and unfortunately nobody got our question over the last 2 weeks, so we didn't give away our wonderful prize, the I Love Lucy Mix and Match Magnet Set. Here's the question. On the classic CBS 1960s comedy series He and She, name the comic strip that he, played by Richard Benjamin, created. The answer, Jetman, J-E-T-M-A-N, who was turned into a television series played by the character of Jetman, played by that wonderful comedy star, Jack Cassidy, who, by the way, was terrific on the show with Richard Benjamin and Paul Apprentice, his wife, on screen. So once again, the answer, Jetman was the comic strip character that Richard Benjamin created as he on the CBS classic comedy series He and She. Well, we're going to try again to get a winner, and this time we have two prizes to play. The I Love Lucy Mix and Match Magnet Set is already in here, and we're going to add to that a really wonderful treat, A Hollywood Christmas, a star special that was made back in 1996, hosted by Jane Seymour, in a special holiday limited edition video cassette box. And that can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Back in 2002, FX got into the original scripted game with The Shield, the story about a group of renegade cops operating in Los Angeles, headed by Vic Mackey, played brilliantly by Michael Chiklis, became one of the first actors in a cable series to win a Primetime Emmy Award and a Golden Globe Award in the same year. I had the chance to meet Michael when he, during the first year, came down to the National Cable Television Association's annual conference for a special appearance. He came to the press room, had a chance to talk with him at length. He had lunch with all of us. It was a lot of fun. And the show ran 7 years. A lot of great talent came out of that show. It was created by Sean Ryan. And here's our question. Name the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield takes place. Name the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield takes place. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to close your name and address when you send in the email. And if you first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, make sure you play in. Do it all the way, and all the very best. When we come back, more about the Primetime Emmy Awards last night. We'll break down the awards, the show, CBS's handling of things, and we'll also have some thoughts for the TV Academy, what they should do with the awards next year. It's not too early to think about that, especially with made-for-TV movie categories. We'll get to all that after we pause after the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget that BTR is your home for the Independent Music Showcase. It's on Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Independent Music Showcase, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7, YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of this 90-minute Monday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum live from New York. Coming up, we have thoughts about the Emmy Awards we're on last night, which, by the way, if you haven't heard, the initial viewership was actually up 16% from the all-time low last year. 7.4 million people tuned in. We'll break down my thoughts about the show, about the awards themselves, about CBS's handling of things, and some things the TV Academy ought to think about doing next year. And we want to hear from you, too. So if you have some Primetime Emmy Award thoughts about who won, who didn't win, your thoughts for the show, give us a call, 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Number good anyway, you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. We've got the chat room going as well. SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you need to have others coming in on the conversation through Facebook timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your talk speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions of other people live with you. I'll have my post-Emmy comments for you after some quickies. Hallmark Channel will offer a holiday movie that will feature an autistic lead character for the first time. Holly Robinson Peake will co-star and executive produce The Christmas Bond, playing later this year on the Hallmark Channel. The final season of Netflix's acclaimed young adult dramedy On My Block, set in South Central Los Angeles, whose creators were on our program a few years ago. Well, it premieres October 4th. And in another Netflix development, Virgin River, the popular young adult dramedy, will get two more seasons, staying on the service with original episodes through 2023. Hit Monkey, Hulu's latest Marvel Toon series, picks off November 17th. George Takei and Olivia Munn head the voice cast with Ted Lasso star and last night's Big Emmy winner, Jason Sudeikis. And six more episodes of Bridge and Tunnel, Edward Burns' epic dramedy set in 1980s New York City, started production in NYC today. The second season expected to play on Epix next year. And that is news notes, quickies and all, for today. And now some thoughts about the Primetime Emmy Awards that were on last night on CBS, which ran 3 hours and 15 minutes. And whenever I get to analyze an entertainment award show, I like to break it down. So I'm going to break it down by first the awards themselves, then the show, how good it was or how bad it was, a little bit about CBS's handling of things, and then some thoughts for the Television Academy to ponder about for next year's Emmys. First, the awards themselves. If there's a big takeaway from last night, it's this. The smart TV set and the smart TV device is what is dictating how people watch and use television, because it was these devices now being used by more than 85% of all U.S. households that got Netflix and Hulu and all the plus services from Apple TV Plus to Disney Plus HBO Max off the ground. And lo and behold, the usage has now reached the point where not only shows from these various services can win Emmy, can get Emmy nominated, they can win Emmys and win them big. Think about this. Netflix won 10 Emmys last night. And they won two of the big four when it came to the big scripted categories. Best Drama Series for The Crown, Best Miniseries for The Queen's Gambit. The Crown, by the way, got 7 out of the 10 Emmys. And Queen's Gambit got 2. Not only that, but Apple TV Plus got 4 Emmy wins, and all 4 were for Ted Lasso, which included the Best Comedy Series Emmy. And yes, a win for Jason Zegers, as I just mentioned. And by the way, in the Creative Arts Emmys Awards, Netflix won the Best Made-for-TV Movie Award for a Dolly Parton holiday movie, Christmas on the Square. Beat out 2 Amazon movies that were highly touted to win that category. And overall, Netflix won, get this, 44 Emmy Awards. That ties a record set decades ago by CBS. How ironic is that, that CBS ran the show last night? And HBO came in second with 13. Disney Plus came in second on streaming services with 12. And that's really amazing. Now, on to some of the awards. So you got to give credit to Netflix and Apple TV Plus. HBO Max won 3, by the way, all for Hacks, the Gene Smart comedy. Great to see Gene Smart, a wonderful talent for many, many years in both comedy and drama shows, be nominated for both comedy and drama and win for comedy, for Best Actress Comedy for Hacks, which also won for writing and directing in a comedy series. That was one of the big surprises last night. Now, I thought The Crown, by the way, may have won too many Emmys. I thought, for example, that that in some of the acting categories, it could have been somebody else, one of them being Michael K. Williams, who I think deserved, more than deserved, that Emmy for Best Supporting Actor posthumously for Lovecraft Country. Really thought she should have won it. I also thought when it came to the miniseries categories that Barry Jenkins should have won Best Director for The Underground Railroad. Excellent show. For me, that was the big surprise of the whole Emmy competition, was that one of the best miniseries of recent years, The Underground Railroad, which should have also gotten some technical achievement maybe in cinematography or film editing, did not. A lot of the awards that could have gone to Underground Railroad went to The Queen's Gambit, and deservedly so. It was a very tough – that one category, best miniseries, was the toughest. Incidentally, you should know that, disclosure, Bill Horberg, the executive producer – of The Queen's Gambit, who also did a movie called Searching Bobby Fischer, was on our program last October. And then the week after, we had Michelle Tesoro, the editor of the program, who also won an editing Emmy last weekend. Congratulations to Michelle and to Bill and the rest of the crew for that. And yes, I agree that far too many times shows that have won before, like Saturday Night Live and RuPaul's Drag Race, won again. It seemed to be a situation where there were a lot of streaks going on. Mare of Eastwood would win 2 or 3, including Kate Winslet. Ted Lasso would win, you know, 2 or 3. The Crown would win 2 or 3, and it kept on going on. It seemed to be a few shows were the winners. So I wish things were maybe spread out a little bit more. However, I am happy that Michaela Cole did win for writing I May Destroy You. I wasn't happy that Ewan McGregor won for Holston. That was another big surprise. And I also think that some of the other shows that were nominated could have also won, like 10-15. And a Black Lady sketch show should have had its thing rather than Last Week Tonight. Last Week Tonight's gotten lots of awards over the years, deserves it always every year, but it's time to, like, spread it out to other people. And yes, there were, I think, some people disappointed that Hamilton's stars did not win. I have some thoughts about why they didn't win in a moment, and that gets me to what the TV Academy should do to prevent things like that from going on. If there was an award moment, and I think a big one, and it's my pick, by the way, for not only the best award presentation of the Emmys, but maybe the best award presentation and reaction of any entertainment award show to this point, it was Debbie Allen winning the Governor's Award. I am a huge Debbie Allen fan. I have enjoyed her work since she broke into television big time as one of the Three Girls Three on that short-lived NBC variety series. Loved her in Fame. Loved her directing shows like Different World and The Cosby Show. She is as versatile a person in this field as possible. And what a talent. Acting, singing, dancing. She does it all. She does it great. And she also gives back with her dance academy and many, many other things. I thought her speech last night was the speech of the night. I'm happy the timekeeper got a comeuppance. And this is how you give a classy speech for a special award. This is how you do it. You want to know how you do it? You do it the way Debbie Allen did. And I'll tell you, that when she walked out on that stage in that beautiful gown, that audience gave her as fantastic a standing ovation as you will hear anywhere. And I mean, the love in that audience at that moment was truly extraordinary. So those are my thoughts overall about the awards. Yes, a lot of disappointment. Yes. Oh, one more thing. Yes, very disappointed that very few people of color, among a lot of nominees of color that were in the hunt, very few people of color won. That bothered me. And maybe we have to think about how these awards are judged in future years. But I will still give the TV Academy credit for at least nominating more people of diverse background than ever before. So that's my thinking about the awards. Now the show. Here's what worked, along with that Debbie Allen speech. That opening number with in tribute to the rap star, which also was a wonderful opening number in terms of the lyrics talking about a certain state of television with the sing-along with the audience led by Cedric the Entertainer, just wonderful. A great moment. Very inventive way to start the show. And you got the sense that the audience was pumped up and ready to party, and I thought it was absolutely terrific. Here's another thing that worked. The diverse lineup of presenters, including the gang from Reservoir Dogs, coming off that second season renewal by FX. I have a hunch they will be nominated next year for Emmys. I'd be surprised if they're not. They certainly show up for Peabody Award, too. And I like what they said about Native Americans' role on and off the TV camera. So I really give them credit for that. I want to give credit to the way the In Memoriam segment was arranged. I'll have more to say about this in a second. But in terms of the fact that, unlike other In Memoriam segments this year, especially the Oscars, it was far better than anybody else's entertainment award show this year so far. It was more comprehensive than before. Yes, there were some absentees like Irma Callis and a few others that should have been in. And I think it got screwed by the way that segment was handled. More about that in a moment. But bottom line, the best In Memoriam I think the Emmys have done in quite a while in terms of the arrangement of the people that were honored, including that wonderful closing speech by Michael K. Williams. Great move to end that segment that way. And I also like the set. I like the tent. I like the intimacy. I like the way the intimacy was handled by the cameras. And I thought it was very well handled overall. And Cedric the Entertainer was terrific. He didn't have great material to work with, but he tried to make the most of it. And I think he was up for it, and I'd like to see him host it again. I really do. I think he did some good stuff throughout the night, and he really tried his best. Now, here's what didn't work. First, an abominable series, one after another, of comedy bits. Whether it was the Stephen Colbert with his recall of the Marvelous Miss Maisel boat, trying to, on the Gavin Newsom situation. I thought the Larry Elder joke, the Larry Elder side, I thought was uncalled for. Not to mention the presenter who came on stage with the crazy walk. The stupid teleprompter bit with the people from Bleak's Creek, which I thought actually was happening. A lot of people got, surprised and embarrassed by that. We all thought, yeah, the teleprompter did break down, so, get on with it already. Present the award. Not good. Therapy session with people who never won Emmys. You've seen something like that before. It was a very tired sketch. Dr. Phil didn't even help at the end. The bits were abominable, and they slowed the show down. They really, really did. What worked were the acceptance speeches. What didn't work was the skits. And I'd like to have to say something to the Emmy people. Why can't you do more musical numbers? What is stopping you from doing more musical numbers that breaks up the monotony and makes things work? I don't understand it. Why couldn't you have another musical number or two? The Oscars, when they did pretty good with it. How about you guys? Why can't you have a thing? I know you can't do theme songs from shows. The theme songs are unfortunately an invisible art anymore. But how about doing what you did with that opening number, trying something different that also could satirize television with some good writing? I don't understand why you couldn't do it. And I really think if you could substitute some of those comedy bits that were abysmal for some musical bits, I think the show would have been much better received by a lot of critics and also by the audience too. And finally, to some of the presenters and some of the nominees and some of the winners, do you really need to curse? Do you really need to say the F word and the S word, et cetera, to make a point? No, you don't. And I'm happy Eliva got bleeped. But frankly, you know, it doesn't work, folks. Stop it. You are not talking just to the audience in the tent. You're talking to, as it turned out, 7.4 million people, and they will turn you off if you curse. I'm sorry. That's it. That's the rule, period. So stop doing it. You don't need the point. You don't need to make the point with the curse words. You don't need the profanity to make the points. Debbie Allen did not need profanity to say what she said. Michaela Cole, same thing. It's amazing what language can do when you use it. So how about using it? And finally, back to the In Memoriam segment. I liked John Patisse's contribution musically. Again, I liked the format was terrific. The problem was the directing of it. It should have been full screen. From the moment that song started, it should have been full screen to see each and every one of those people being honored. Not split, the horizontal split screen did not work. And for that, the director gets the it's the director's responsibility to make sure that segment works. It didn't. Because of bad camera work, the horizontal split screen did not work. Show the beginning with the musical performers, with John Batiste and his friend, then go right to the slides. Stay on the slides. Don't cut away. Stay on the slides. Give everybody who's being honored their due. Finish with the Michael Williams thing, and then go back to the performance at the end, finishing up the song and taking a bow. That's all you need to do. Bad move, CBS directing. They get the brickbat for that one. I was ready 30 minutes into the show to give this show a 9 on a scale of 10. I'm sorry, I'm going to give it a 7. I think that the acceptance speeches, especially Debbie Allen and Michaela Cole, I think they saved the show. The comedy, I think a lot of it that was really good was pulled down by the bad comedy and the profanity and a few other things too. Oh, one other thing. It was great to see this show was literally free of what the other shows have been guilty of. Bad production numbers that polarized people. The inside baseball was reduced to a minimum. Good for them. Good for the producers. And also the politics. It was great to see the focus was on honoring the art, celebrating the art. And I also give credit to the TV Academy president for doing that in his remarks. And on that note, I have to say, and I saw Mark Brennan saying, I agree with you, Mark, Conan O'Brien, I thought, was distasteful last night. I thought he should not have done what he did, the salute, the whole thing. I don't know what was in his head. I know he didn't win, and maybe he should have won for the final season of his TBS talk show and his career. I get that. But you don't need to take it out on everybody else by interfering with the TV Academy's president's remarks, particularly when he's going to be introducing Debbie Allen's Governor's Award. I don't know what was in the water or whatever, but Conan, disappointed in you. You didn't do yourself any favors last night with what you did with your escapade. It was not called for. And it really took away from the – it took the focus away. And I thought that the TV Academy president had some nice things to say about diversity, and that all got pushed aside because of what you did. So, Conan, I think you ought to call up the president and say, I apologize. It was my fault. I took away your focus, and that won't happen again. Now, one thing for CBS. I told you last week that for the second week year in a row, I was going to be in the virtual press room, and I was. And I was under the assumption that I was going to be able, as I did last year with ABC's presentation, to ask the winners questions from where yours truly was here in New York. That turned out not to be the case. When I got into the room, I learned that the only people that were able to ask questions were the reporters and pundits who were stationed at the event in L.A. I wish CBS could have said something about that. That would have been nice. And I'm really sorry because there were a lot of people I wanted to talk to and never got the chance. Not only yours truly, but anybody else who called, any other reporter, pundit, journalist who called in from around the country and was expecting the same treatment like ABC last year. I thought ABC did a beautiful job. They gave everybody their opportunity to question. I'm surprised CBS did not look into the Zoom possibility. I think they should have done it, and that would have even made the press room even better. And it's a shame because the press room was, without that, really terrific. Very well put together, very well handled. Bravo, CBS. I just wish that you had allowed people like me from around the country to join the press on location in Los Angeles to ask questions of the winners when they got backstage. Finally, some thoughts for the TV Academy. Here's the big one. You have got to give made-for-TV movies their due. I'm sorry. What you are doing to the made-for-TV movie genre is abysmal, and it's disgusting. Number one, to have the major award for made-for-TV movies in the Creative Arts Award, not on last night's event, is an outrage. And the made-for-TV production community should be on your back getting it back on the air next year. That's number one. Number two, you cannot have made-for-TV movie actors, writers, and directors judged against miniseries writers, actors, and directors. It is impossible, and it's unfair for people to judge performances and programs that run 90 minutes to 2 hours up against performances and work on miniseries that run 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 hours or more. It's impossible. Made-for-TV movies cannot compete in the same category. It's time to bring back the acting, writing, and directing categories for made-for-TV movies. Unquestionably. Again, made-for-TV movie production community, get on the case with the TV Academy. It's time to raise your voice, rise above, and get going. And let's see that happen next year. And one more thing. It may be also time for the Emmys to establish a new category for anthology series, weekly anthologies. We've got a bunch of them out now, like Modern Love, like The Premise, just starting on FX, B.J. Novak's program, as well as Little America, which should have won a Peabody Award this year, coming back for a second season on Apple TV+. These weekly anthology shows deserve a place in the Emmy spotlight, not as part of a miniseries category. And I would also suggest something for a yearly anthology like American Crime Story and so on and so forth. So, folks, TV Academy, I hope you take my recommendations in, but especially bring the acting categories, the writing and directing categories back for made-for-TV movies. Give them a fair shot. That's why the Hamilton people did not win. You can't judge what the Hamilton actors did against Kate Winslet and Anna Taylor-Joy and Helen McGregor and so forth for all the work they do on miniseries. You can't. You can't. There's no way. And it's unfair to the judges, and it's unfair to the talent. So stop it. Separate categories, acting, writing, directing, for made-for-TV movies. Both actor and actress, by the way. And let's get an anthology series category. One for yearly anthologies like American Crime Story, Horror Story, etc., the Ryan Murphy shows, as well as one for weekly anthologies like Modern Love, Little America, The Premise, etc., etc. I'd love to hear what you think. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Or you can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and on Twitter. I'd love to hear what you think about the Emmys. I'd love to hear you think about what's going on. We have a couple minutes left, by the way, so we'll be very happy to take a chat room reaction. I think we had somebody in the chat room that was just on Solar Landlord. That's right, so it was in there. So Solar Landlord, if you can hear me, if you had any comment, love to hear it. Put it in the room, give us a call, and we'll take it in the last couple minutes we have on. Again, I'm sorry that Roger Neal, the executive producer of Idle Chat on Retro TV and the Family Channel, was not with us. Idle Chat, again, is on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Retro TV, a half hour earlier on the Family Channel. Both services available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and in many markets available as a multicast channel, either on the digital subcarrier of a local TV station or as a local cable channel. And what we'll do is we will find out what happened, why Roger Neal, the executive producer of Idle Chat, could not get on today. And we will invite him to come on the show either on Wednesday's episode or on Friday's episode. All right? And since we have a couple minutes left, let me give you one more time the classic trivia question of the week, our new question. Again, we've got an I Love Lucy mix and match magnet set, and we have the Star Special, A Hollywood Christmas, hosted by Jane Seymour for you, if you know the answer to this question. Name the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield takes place. Name the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield takes place. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please close your name and where you're from with that answer. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question first thing tomorrow morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum. and on Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. It's UBC Simon, TWBT. Again, I want to thank both of our guests today for coming on, Joel Wertman from Retro TV and the Family Channel, and Jim Romanovich from Popstar TV. That latter service available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and an Emmy Award-winning service as well. Remember, coming up Wednesday on the Marvy Televised, Vin Rubino, the executive producer of the second season of Supermarket Sweep. That comes your way starting this Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time on your local ABC station after the second season premiere of Celebrity Wheel of Fortune. Then on Friday, we will have the three co-showrunners of the new NBC adventure saga, La Brea. David Applebaum, who I believe is no relation to yours truly. We may find out the contrary. We'll see. Stephen Lillian and Brian Winbrandt will be with us. And then the head of original content, the very popular nonfiction service Curiosity Stream on smart TV sets and devices, headed by John Hendricks, the former Discovery Channel. Rob Burke will be with us. They got some very exciting prizes, including a unique documentary special coming up toward the end of the month. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, including the episodes we did last year with on the Queen's Gambit, with Bill Hoberg, the executive producer, last October, Michelle Tesoro, the filmmaker. They both won Emmy Awards for their work. Go to our homepage. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You'll enjoy our program. I hope you had a chance to hear our episode we did last Friday with Andy Castillo, the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment. I'm sure she's very happy with the fact that Bridge and Tunnel, the Edward Burns series last year on FX, is now starting a new season of production, six episodes in The Big Apple today. So check us out, blogtalkradio.com/televised. You want to check us out on podcasts. We're available 24/7 on the iRadio Podcast Network. We're on Speaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Reason, and Verbal 24/7. And on our brand-new website, that's tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. Latest episode at the top of the page, on the homepage, recent episodes on the bottom. As always, we love hearing from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, you can also find me on Facebook and LinkedIn and follow me on Twitter. I do respond to your emails and social media feeds within 24 hours. Why? Because as always, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other streams of this program. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website service provided by PodSite, the new internet avenue for podcasts. For more details, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is guitarist Victress. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift any time of the year for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. We are back on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and our various podcast sites, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, go over your medical records, get a second opinion if you need to, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.